Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, JB, you do this bit. I haven't got the enthusiasm to do it. Come on, Welshman.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. What a glorious day. We are the rugby podcast that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I don't know about you, Tim. Have you noticed the clear, bright, crystal skies, a little nip in the air?
No.
It's been a beautiful, clear day. Hello, Phil, of course. Phil's here.
Hello, Jonathan.
How are you feeling, mate?
I had quite a big day yesterday. On the beers, on the Negronis from about 8:30.
Yes, I had a wonderful Negroni at your house. Thank you very much.
We had a few.
We did.
Few of them, few Proseccos. There was champagne on ice. Unfortunately, it very quickly got taken off ice and put back in the cupboard. Mm. So we had a few beers yesterday, out until, I was out until just before midnight. And then woke up with a bit of a hangover this morning, but blew away the cobwebs with a 10-course taster menu and accompanying wine flight for lunch.
How nice.
I feel fairly sanguine about yesterday in my current state.
Yes. Well, why don't you tell us exactly how you watch the game, Tim? But before you do that, remember to follow us on Twitter at Rugby Podcast. You can download us from all the main places. In fact, we're even on Spotify now. Is that right?
We are on Spotify. Although, seriously, I have stats and it's still something like 70% on Apple. Podcasts.
I don't know. Wow. I don't know.
But you can get get onto Android. What are all these number of people doing on iPhones? What are you doing with your iPhone?
I find people who use iPhones weird. I find them really peculiar. But, you know, people do it. People do it.
Lots of people do, clearly.
Yeah.
So 70% of our listeners do.
Yes.
We're offending.
Yeah. All of that stuff. But Tim, why don't you tell me where you watched the final?
I watched the game in Greece, which actually, with the 2 hours ahead, made it a much more civilised time to watch a game. It was 11 a.m. local time. So I had a couple. I actually, for the first time in my life, I think, went for a walk where there was no purpose to the walk whatsoever. Because I was so. I started watching a little bit of the build up. I started fidgeting, walking around. I wasn't really paying attention to conversations, but people were talking to me and I wasn't really listening. And I actually just went, I'm going for a walk. I can't take this. I can't take waiting for this game to happen.
So one of the advantages, I hosted for about 12, 14 people and a load of babies as well. So I spent from about 7:30 in the morning preparing breakfast and drinks.
So it's taking mind off it.
And I finish it perfectly in time. I finished just in time for kickoff. But I had no time in that morning to panic, to overthink anything, which is quite good. I'm glad I didn't waste any brain power thinking about what could be, what might have been, when what happened.
Well, I did. And wasted lots of it. But it was great. There was a crowd of us. And as I said on the last podcast, at great trouble and moderate expense, I got a load of sausages and bacon, which are, you know, not things you find in Greece.
But
we had some to feed the troops.
Why do you not find sausage and bacon in Greece? That surprises me. I thought they would eat sausage and bacon literally just to annoy the Turks.
Bacon not really a thing in Greece. It's not a thing.
Is it really?
No. Pork, I mean, God, yeah, pork.
Yeah,
hell yeah.
I'm sure.
Every type of pork.
I'm sure when I go to Cyprus that they actually do pork kebabs there just to annoy the northern population of northern Cyprus.
But
sure of it.
Cyprus is a lot more anglicised.
Yes.
As in three-point pins drive on the left-hand side of the road.
That is true.
So.
But anyway, I mean, in the coverage, I thought the build-up, the 2 hours of it, there were some really, really lovely bits in there. And I've got to say, I think ITV's coverage, broadly speaking, over the 7 weeks, I think it's been excellent.
I've really enjoyed it.
I think it's been really excellent.
I would have changed a few pundits, but overall,
yes.
Overall.
The dojo was a little bit odd. Grown men in suit jackets and socks was weird.
What's really funny about that is...
In Maidstone.
Yeah. If it was in Japan, fine.
I think what they should have done is like a dimmer switch type approach. Because I understand when it all kicks off and everyone's excited, oh, look, the novelty of not wearing shoes in a dojo. 8 weeks down the line, it's starting to get a bit weird. So I'd have done it for the group stages, but then I think I would have changed the set completely for the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, one bit that I didn't like was it was really close to kickoff, and they came back off a break, and Mark Pugac said something like, "Well, with the Brexit debate raging on in England," it's like, "Come on,
get off, yeah, get,
leave that out of it, please."
Raging.
Yeah.
Eddie Jones did actually mention that in his midweek press conference as well.
Oh yeah, he did,
said,
didn't he?
All the Brexit shenanigans. He didn't say anything about anything in either direction, but he just said the country needs something.
Mark Pugac has probably ruined a wonderful moment there, where Brexiteer and Remainer are arm in arm sharing a pint, and then they snap back into their partisan ways.
Yeah, I reckon. I mean, there's a picture of Boris Johnson doing the rounds, him watching it in his England shirt with his dog. I reckon Corbyn was snuggled up next to him until that moment.
Yeah, exactly. Brings people together.
And in fact, you know, Phil just mentioned before we started this podcast, Phil mentioned a great point. He said there will be a lot of people who probably have listened throughout the World Cup and can't bring themselves to listen, but that may not be the case. That may be the case if we get straight into the post-mortem. So before we do that, let's try and be positive for a minute, both about England and about the World Cup in general.
I think that's only fair. I mean, no matter how much I'm going to mock England in a minute, and I will, I'll have a bit of fun with it, there's no denying it. It's an incredible achievement. You know, there is no shame in coming up short in the final of, you know, the hardest game in the sport. So, you know, there's nothing to be sad about. I mean, it'd be nice to win the game, but I thought it was a remarkable tournament for them, and they deserve to be there.
On any given day, a team will win and a team will lose.
Exactly right.
Yeah,
exactly right.
That's so. I was, after about 45 minutes, I was fairly relaxed about the result.
Yeah.
I kind of, until that point, I was getting a bit frustrated, and then I thought, no, the better team on the day is going to win this. And then I stepped back and thought, are we now in a position where you've got half a dozen teams who, on any given Sunday, can all beat each other? And you can get a team that 1 week loses to the All Blacks.
Yeah.
Then faces a team that beats the All Blacks and then hammers the team that beats... Which, by normal logic, you would say, well, it's going to go the other way.
Mm.
But there's other teams in that mixer as well. Australia have shown in the last couple of years they've beat these teams. Wales have beat South Africa something like 5 out of the last 6 times they've played them.
Yeah.
So all of these teams are right up there in the mix.
Sorry. Carry on. I'm just messing around with some wires. No, I agree. And one of the things I said at the start of the tournament is this tournament's unique for having a complete mixed bag of teams who are all fundamentally flawed. Every one of those teams is flawed. Wales could have beaten South Africa.
France could have beaten Wales.
Yeah.
Argentina could have beaten France.
Exactly.
Tonga could have beaten France.
USA nearly beat France.
Yeah.
And then you've got the All Blacks who beat South Africa, but they were a little bit arrogant, I think. Well, not arrogant, maybe they changed their team around too quickly. You know, so there was all sorts of different things. Ireland obviously were horrifically flawed. Then who battered Scotland? You know, and Scotland were flawed. Everyone had a major flaw, and none of the teams seemed to be interested in fixing that flaw. It's just, well, you'll take us as and how we come, and that will be that.
Fantastic World Cup Japan laid on, but so many metrics there were on percentage of ticket sales, revenue, number of eyeballs watching it on television. There's by so many measures, it's been the most successful Rugby World Cup.
I think it's hands down the most successful World Cup. You know, new country, great country. It's just worked really, really well.
Taking away home advantage for one of the big teams as well.
Absolutely.
Is massive. And from JB and I going out there and seeing both the country, but also the fans, the Japanese fans out there, and how much they love the sport. There's been loads and loads of videos online and shared everywhere about it, but there is a genuine passion in Japan for rugby.
Yep, completely agree. And I don't know where it's going to go next. Well, I do know, actually. It's going to go to France. That's not what I meant at all. but I can't think of the next country I'd like it to go to, for instance. And I don't know how you go about it, because a World Cup is a big beast. And if you don't have the right infrastructure, as I will find out, you can't hold it. But an America's World Cup would be brilliant.
Oh,
North America.
Yeah. Vancouver and Seattle on the West Coast, only a few hours apart, Canada, USA. You could have New York, Toronto.
Yeah.
It was all sorts of
Canada and US sounds good.
Yeah, and sounds even Argentina. Good. I mean, you could
do
maybe
South America tournament.
You could send two groups to South America. You could send two groups to North America, and then meet for the final in North America.
Central America.
Central America. Panama.
Cuba.
Exactly. Yeah, the Saracens players could go and visit company's house in Panama. Be perfect for them. Get some business done.
Right, come on then. Let's get into this final. And firstly, and again, sticking with the positives, you have to congratulate South Africa. It's interesting you just mentioned it was a neutral for one of the quote-unquote tier one sides. And that's the third different country that South Africa have won it in. They've won it in Asia, they've won it in the Northern Hemisphere, and they've won it in their home.
South Africa.
It's the third continent.
Third country.
But just to highlight that not only have they won it again after 12 years, they've won their third out of seven World Cups that they've participated in, but they've done it again without home field advantage and, you know, about as far away from South Africa as you could get culturally and all the rest of it. So, I mean, fair play.
It's awesome.
Fair play. And after that first game.
And I'm
well.
So glad they won. I'm not glad because they beat England. I'm glad because of the way that they won it. And I'm, you know, in a week where we've had Rugby X and, you know, everyone whining about skills, you know, it's skills of the future, teach skills to kids, this, that, and the other. I'm so glad that big men won the Rugby World Cup. Bludgeoning big men. And it fills my heart with joy. That the scrimmage meant something too. And we're so quick.
The scrimmage meant everything.
Exactly.
In this game.
It meant everything.
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 Like the set piece was important. Line out and the scrum. And that's sort of what rugby should be about. Skills are great, but only if you've done all the fundamentals. And I loved watching them put the fundamentals in.
Well, I mean, the scrum has been depowered over the last few years. It has been.
Well, what happened? I mean, scrums are the old concussions, right? Because it used to be everyone is going to have serious injuries and no one will ever be able to play rugby again if we don't address a scrum.
Yeah.
It doesn't strike me that they solved any of the issues with the scrum to start with, but they've just moved on to something else now.
They took out the hit, which was...
But the hit's more for resetting. It's not really... The hit was removed, so the scrum set was more stable.
But it was also... You're taking a massive amount of impact. So I agree, it does... It stabilises the scrum, and that was one of the reasons that you're doing it. But you had teams using it as an attacking weapon.
So
Adam Jones, when they took out the hit, his career went downhill.
Yeah, I mean, there was some real technique in getting that hit right. But interestingly, they had a scrum machine, I've mentioned this before, in France, made by a missile manufacturer. I want to say it's like the Thales Group or someone like that. And this scrum machine, like, it was big data before big data, I guess, and measuring everything. And one of the things that they found out is it was the hit, not the fact that people were buckling and falling down because the hit pressure was so great. They were hitting and bouncing back out the scrum, and that's what was forcing scrums down.
Yeah, you weren't able to get a clean bind.
That's right, yeah.
So you're getting an uneven bind.
Yeah.
But this game did. It really showed the value. You're exactly right, Jay, the point you made before. You can have all the skills, and all the skills are brilliant. If you don't have the fundamental building blocks, you've got to earn the right to showcase your skills. If you fail to do that, you will get destroyed.
Exactly. And it was good to see, not because it was England, just because I love that brand of rugby.
Yes, and even notwithstanding that, and there's no denying that, as you say, the scrum was incredibly important, but it wasn't just important because of the field position and the points that it gave South Africa. I think they got six penalties in the first half from scrums, and nine of their 12 points in the first half came from scrum penalties. I mean, that's huge. But not just that, but what I found disappointing about it was the psychological impact it had on the England side. And in absolute stark contrast, I talked on last week's podcast after the semi-final about it just blowing my mind seeing the shocked expression, like the thousand-yard stare on Kieran Reid and Sam Whitelock, men who've won two World Cups and over 100 caps each. and you saw that same 1,000-yard stare on England guys after 10 minutes.
You know, that's what's so for all the things that teams talk about, leadership and, you know, we're so confident and this, that and the other, until you, you know, metaphorically, until you get punched in the face, you don't really know. That same happened to Kieran Reid. And I would have liked to have seen England try to figure out that scrum a little bit smarter. I don't know exactly what they could have done, but I'm sure there are things, and you know, they should have, they needed to do something. And if it didn't come from the players, it had to come from management. And I would have made a change early doors, actually.
They were forced into it, and we'll never know what would have happened had Kyle Sinclair.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Kyle Sinclair is the answer to the scrummage per se, but maybe, you know, you make the South Africans work a bit harder.
We'll never know.
All that, the whole scrummage dominance might have happened. If we didn't see a single scrum with Kyle Sinclair, they might have been that dominant with him in because they simply targeted so heavily the scrum. Mm. We don't know that. What I would attribute is the way that England played as a consequence of knowing the fact that if they play too risky rugby and they have a knock-on, it's not a knock-on, they are giving a penalty to South Africa.
Yes.
So they played such, by contrast to how they played against Australia for the first 65 minutes, how they played against Argentina in the second half, how they played against New Zealand, they played so narrow and ended up going down that one-out rugby route.
I know.
Which is the last thing you want to do against South Africa.
It's something amazing that South Africa, it's like one of those tractor beams in sci-fi movies that just drag you in. South Africa just make you play the way they want you to play.
Well, I've got an unpopular opinion for you. It just showed the quality of the Welsh performance to be within 3 points of South Africa and to play them at their own game. You know, it maybe it wasn't as mad as we all thought.
Yeah, and with a huge number of injuries as well.
Yeah.
Maybe that is a great point from this game.
Yeah, perhaps. I think South Africa, in contrast to England, who were way off where they were, mentally and in accuracy and in every measure, South Africa were a lot better.
What did you make?
They saved their best rugby for the final.
They did.
So there's a few things I'd like your opinion on. What was your take on, I think 5 minutes in, England play a backs move from underneath their own sticks? Was that just extreme confidence or was that madness?
My take on that was, and I understand the decision. I think they'd obviously spoken about South Africa are dropping all three of their back three players right back, expecting kicks.
Yeah.
If we just kick it, we've got Cheslin Kolbe, Willy LaRue and Mapimpi just in the backfield waiting for it. We can't just let them do that. We have to keep them honest and make them join the defensive line, and then that will give us more space to then kick into. And there was a few times when George Ford actually kicked really well territorially and found grass. But it wasn't just that. It was the pass from Owen Farrell behind the sticks was woeful.
It
hit the deck.
Yeah.
The pass from Ben Youngs, going for the miracle pass over the head of Anthony Watson into touch. God. The pass from Billy Vunipola in his own 22, picking up from number 8 and just throwing it on the deck. It was like, where was this team that had the Japan-like handling of last week?
Because the conditions as well, they spoke about the conditions in the game and said it's been a perfectly dry, nice temperature, low humidity, reasonable temperature. It is the perfect conditions to play attacking handling rugby. So there's you can't blame anything on that. You can blame it on pressure.
Yeah.
And you can partially, potentially blame it on perhaps they played their final a week too early. They were so built up.
Gatland was right about that.
Yeah.
He's very rarely wrong.
Such a game plan to beat the All Blacks and so efficiently destroyed the All Blacks that they couldn't do it a week later.
So I don't actually think that... I was thinking at the time, what are you doing?
Johnny May tapped and went on his own 22. Did you see that as well?
Well, because they don't want lineouts. South Africa make you play... Yeah. Wales did the same thing last week. They never kicked a touch.
It's not the first time they've taken quick taps like that. They really sped up the tempo in the Argentina game. It's a different game. It's a different calibre of opposition, but it's the same strategy.
Yeah.
They tapped, went, and then rather... because it was only a free kick, remember? They tapped, went, and then they did a box kick, which stayed in field on that Johnny May tap and go inside his own 22. So I understand why they did it, but again, and you've got to credit South Africa for this, England were forced to play at a ridiculously slow tempo. They were forced to not kick because they had their three guys back there, and they they were forced to scrum and fear giving away penalties.
And they couldn't get through that South African defence. That's the other thing. I mean, they just lined up with big bodies and they slammed everyone.
Yes, I don't want to criticise the defence because it was heroic.
The defence was superb. But South Africa made their defence easy by slowing the ball down at the ruck.
Yes.
Very effectively. They played the referee. What was disappointing was we said on our podcast on Thursday, South Africa will slow the ball down at the ruck. We knew that. The England team must have known that. They failed to counteract. And that's what's disappointing. Yeah. Yes. England failed to come up with a strategy.
Maybe the big lesson is we should be in charge of the England side.
I'm not sure we came up with an effective strategy to counteract it.
Well, that's true.
We at least identified the issue.
We identified the issue.
I think I might mention something last week which would have been of interest, particularly with hindsight now, which is you don't pick two sevens to beat two sevens. Two sevens ruin other people's breakdowns, but they don't look after your own. And maybe they did need a bigger-bodied guy to hit rucks, like a James Haskell who just clears out everything. And I tell you, the guy who can do that, Mark Wilson. Mark Wilson is a bloody phenomenal rucker. So he just sees a ruck and he destroys everything within a 10-yard radius.
I think Tom Curry and Sam Underhill are excellent at cleaning rucks out.
But usually by
virtue of being the first people there.
Yeah, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. But like James Haskell in his prime was great at that because he would work hard to the ruck and then he would just blow everything away.
I'll tell you who they were missing. Benjamin.
Miles Benjamin.
Yes. Miles Benjamin, Phil.
On the wing.
Yes.
Serious rucking.
Every other ruck hit. The two sevens for me didn't work particularly well this game, and I wonder if they should have adapted that strategy. And the other one as well I'd like to mention is just the sheer quality of the performance from Dwayne Vermaelen. I mean, you spoke about those three guys at the back, and I know number eights do go back to gather kicks, but you just saw the importance of having a big guy in the air, someone that you can't shift, you can't knock out the way, and he'd gather that ball and just start charging forward.
He was a menace at the breakdown as well.
A bigger guy who you can't move.
Yeah, which is one thing we said. Yeah. It's all well and good clearing Surveyor, Kane, Hooper, Pocock, all about 100 kg. When you're trying to clear 120 kg Dwayne Vermaelen, 127 kg Etzebeth, 130 kg Malherbe.
Yep.
It's a different ball game.
Isn't
120 kg Peter Steff-Tatoy.
He was amazing.
Well, at what point did you think, like not just, oh, this isn't good. At what point did you think, oh, we're losing this, we're going down?
First scrum for me. So I turned around to my friend and said, I'm going to put a bet on here for a 15-point win for South Africa after about 10 minutes. And I bottled it because I just failed in my accumulator the night before. I thought basically within the first 10 minutes, if England don't get some sort of toehold in the game, and that was the disappointing part, they never established any sort of...
Well, it's interesting that because the point, I made a note of it here, that during the game I just went 3-0 down. We've just lost it. So we were 3-0 down, and George Ford put in a really great tactical kick, found grass deep in South African territory, forced Willy Larue to kick it out, and England had a line out in between the 10-metre line and the 22. And I thought, right, here we go.
Yep.
Here we go. This is the attacking position. Let's go. And we ballsed up the line out.
Yeah.
Then that led to...
Was that a steal from Peter Steff-Tatoy?
Laws knocked it on. It was under pressure, but Laws knocked it on. So we ballsed up the line out. So it all slowed down again. The scrum took 2 minutes before it was taken. This is the other thing. These scrums have got to be sorted out.
Why? They were great.
The scrums were great, but they take so long.
So I actually said this to Phil, right? And this is no word of a lie. I was in his very, very nice, genteel party. And I said, I much prefer this pace of game because I like to spread the game out over 2.5 hours or whatever it is.
The amount of time it takes to get a scrum set is getting ridiculous. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So we ballsed up a line out after the first time we had really good territory, and I thought, right, here we go. We knocked on the line out, scrum, penalty, but it was a penalty which should never have been a penalty. And there was a few of those because South Africa pushed before the ball was in. Garces gave the penalty. Garces gave the penalty, and Jamie George stood up and said to Garces, you heard it on the ref mic, How can that be a penalty for that? The ball wasn't in.
Yeah. Jamie George's job there is to shut up and then push harder earlier then. Yeah. That's his job.
Well, no, you don't push before the ball's in.
It doesn't matter.
But anyway,
if they are, you do.
But at that point, I said, I said, we've lost.
So I left it a lot later than that, and it was there was the penalty just before halftime on the 39th minute, which made it a 6-point game, and then after 45 or 46 minutes, there was a scrum just inside England's half that South Africa destroyed us. They slot the penalty, they make it, after 45 minutes, it's a 9-point game, and the whole trend and trajectory of the game was going so far away from us. And I was like, right, that is it. And after that, after I kind of resigned to that, before then it was the hope that, no, we can turn this around, we can play like we did against the All Blacks.
Yep.
We can change this. And the hope...
There was no threat, was there?
There wasn't, and I come back to the point I made earlier, which was because a knock-on from us was so costly.
Yeah.
A knock-on is not just a knock-on. A knock-on is actually either 3 points if you're in your own half, or it's a line-out 50 metres downfield if you're in their half.
Yeah.
It was so costly, we were so narrow. And there was a period in the first half where England had the three-minute advantage.
Yeah.
Where England...
That was ridiculous.
...did nothing other than play one-out rugby.
I know.
And then just ended up going backwards and backwards and backwards.
Well, no, there wasn't just one-out rugby. When they did go wider, they then went to, like, what are you doing? Ben Youngs, it could just... Elliot Daly, sorry, could just give the ball to Sam Underhill, but no, I'll go for the big looping miracle ball.
But the problem with that was... They only played wide once they had burnt every single option. They had, once every forward had carried like three or four times.
Yeah, I think I remember saying at this passage of play, like, they looked knackered. Both of the Vunipola boys were walking back into position.
But the Vunipola boys made five or six carries in that one session.
It isn't a knock on their ability or their work rate. They've just had to carry too much in that phase of play.
Yeah,
and because... Well, I mean, it's a chicken and an egg thing. It's they played one out rugby, but and I'm not right. Okay, so Twitter is a ridiculous place.
What?
As we know, Twitter's a ridiculous place. You two things can be true, except on Twitter. So South Africa can be the best team, won on merit, deserved to win, played the best rugby,
defence amazing,
strategy just right, tactically brilliant, scrum overpowered,
amazing.
And I can think also Jerome Garces didn't make it the spectacle that deserved to be.
I thought he did fine.
The reason I bring it up at that point is that three-minute advantage, which was ridiculous in itself.
Yes, it was ridiculous.
I was certain the advantage had gone because they had a try-scoring opportunity.
Yes, they had a try-scoring opportunity.
So we had a bit of blazing row about this.
Yeah.
Like, I think 35 phases or whatever it is too much. Call me old-fashioned.
Especially when you get within 1 yard of the try line.
Yeah.
That is a try-scoring opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm someone who says if you go for a drop goal or go for a kick... crossfield kick and your player's up to compete for it right near the try line and you miss it, well, that's just your opportunity gone.
Yeah, bye.
That's what you chose to do. But that whole passage, I've watched it again, and it's what we said about Garces last week, and it's what he does. So I'm not surprised, and England should have dealt with it better.
Yeah.
But man alive, I thought when that first penalty of the game happened within a minute from Courtney Laws, I thought, brilliant. I mean, it was bad start for England, but I thought, brilliant. He's going to blow his whistle straight away on rucks if there's any infringement. Great.
Yeah.
Because he gave Courtney Laws no time.
Yeah. It was half a second.
Done. I mean, the ball could have come out quite easily. But so I thought, great. And then there was the one on 10 minutes with Itoje where Itoje jackaled and, you know, I had a cup of tea and then a South African arrived and South Africa got the penalty got the scrum somehow, which turned into a penalty. But that 3 minute passage, like, I mean, fair play, they are savvy and they are cynical and they played it brilliantly and I applaud South Africa for it because they played to the referee, but the referee allowed time for South Africans to put their hands on the ball.
I get that, but then if that's the case, why not kick the ball to South Africa and use Underhill and Curry to do exactly the same thing? I mean, they're perfectly well equipped to do so.
Well, there were a couple of occasions, as with Itoje, where I mentioned
horrendous.
Sorry, haven't you just, like... Anyway, but
rugby incident, Tim.
But South Africa dealt with it better, played the ref better, and that's what you have to do, and But I found that passage incredibly frustrating because I don't know, with the chicken or egg. Yes, England lacked a bit of imagination and weren't and were just going one out rugby, but that was partly a consequence of the fact that Garces was just allowing people to lie all over the ball and hold on to it for that extra couple of seconds.
I just say, go and do the same thing to South Africa. And that's a lack of leadership in my mind, because someone needs to say, boys, they're doing it. We either have to counter that or we need to do it ourselves. Well, Jamie George standing up in the scrum saying, sir, they're pushing too early. Don't care.
Well, England kind of did. This is what I say. I'm talking about the spectacle in general, not just England losing.
But I thought the spectacle was marvellous.
I didn't think the spectacle was what it could be, because South Africa showed in the last 10 minutes when it got loose and it was, England were absolutely goosed that they could just, that they have the talent to rip them to shreds. And I think a Nigel Owens or a Wayne Barnes would have facilitated South Africa still winning.
Yeah.
But it would have been more of a spectacle.
Oh, I don't know. I was quite happy with how it went, personally. not the result. I loved the game. I loved the physicality of it. I loved how he let the scrimmage develop. It wasn't Garces losing the line-outs.
Do you think neutrals... I mean, because you're not...
I don't know. I do not know what other people think.
I don't think they would have liked that game.
There's some people like... Some people like touch rugby. I don't know how other people think. But... for me, it's very enjoyable. And it doesn't matter which... I found the Wales game enjoyable because it was a fascinating tactical battle. So maybe don't take my word too much on it. But I liked it.
Fair enough. But that was... The two tries were South Africa's first ever tries in a World Cup final.
Is that right?
In their third World Cup final.
The M51 was pretty special. Not because of how good it was. It's because Am passed the ball... And didn't even look to see if MPB's going to... He just wandered off.
Yeah.
Coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was cool. The second try, when you are, after whatever it was, 76 minutes, when you are absolutely gassed, the last thing you want to see is...
Cheslin Colby.
Turn over the ball, straight to Cheslin Colby.
That was some try, wasn't it?
And it was Farrell... Farrell inside him was Dan Cole and Joe Marler treading water inside him.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, missed tackles matter, you see. even though he cut inside, weirdly, they do matter. I would have made some changes if I was Eddie Jones. I think Marler should have come on much earlier. In fact...
Much earlier than 45 minutes?
Yeah, 20 minutes. I think I wanted to see some old-fashioned Eddie nastiness. Do you know when he hooked...
Luther Burrell, Tamina Harrison.
Yep, boys, get off. This isn't for you. The other one
would have been given how well
was Mako that bad.
And Mako was holding up his end of the scrum.
They were getting absolutely pasted on the tight head side, not the loose head side.
If you're going forward on one side, it does affect the other side. And I thought when Marler came on, the scrum actually improved on his side. So Marler definitely. The other guy as well I would have started with would have been George Cruis. I think he's better equipped to handle the South African power than Courtney Laws. Courtney Laws is better to come on later on with a bit of impact, but actually he's not a huge bloke, not in the same way that Cruis is.
I think, well, what would you have Shepherd crooked Laws?
No, I wouldn't have started him.
Well, that's easy to say with hindsight, but I actually think given the way the game panned out, taking off Laws just after half-time...
Wilson would have started as well.
Instead of...
Well, that's a good point, because with hindsight, I mean, if I told you Underhill, you'd think I was insane.
Going into the game, I would have said...
But now
insane.
Looking... But I mean, that's why Eddie Jones gets paid £600,000 a year and I do a podcast. So, it is for him to make these decisions. And I think, I said it on the last podcast, you need something different to protect breakdowns.
No.
I think it is great saying stuff like that with hindsight.
Yeah.
But
well, look, if we...
No one would have made those calls before the game.
I mean, we all called England to win, but between the three of us, we actually outlined a pretty good way of how South Africa would play.
I would just highlight, in our pre-World Cup podcast at Twickenham, I was the only one of the three of us that said South Africa would win the tournament.
You did.
What did I say? France?
You said France. Although we all predicted South Africa would get to the final.
Yeah. We did.
And by definition, I had to pick France.
Yes, because you'd already predicted.
Yeah, there's nowhere else for me to go. France would have won that yesterday. I have no doubt France would have won that. which is a shame of the whole tournament.
So, I mean, I'm kind of torn because, as we said at the start of the podcast, there's you know, England did incredibly well to get there, played some brilliant rugby, have one of the youngest, I think it was the young, that was the youngest ever side that's played a World Cup final.
Yeah.
Which is one of the, I was, after a fair few beers last night, I was looking for positives. And that was one of the positives. I was running through that team and saying, well, other than Dan Cole, who's 33, pretty much everyone will be potentially available.
Well, okay, if
there's a World Cup in 4 years' time.
Yeah, there's a few things which happen now. I mean, World Cup cycles are so brutal, aren't they? Because, it's so finite. I don't know how the boys pick themselves up for the Autumn Internationals or what that sort of rugby looks like when they eventually play. I mean, that's going to be an incredibly weird couple of games. I do think we're going to see a changing of the guard for England. Not necessarily because their players are too old, but I think they've got so much young talent behind them.
I'm not going along with that. For the reason I just said that it's such a young...
Well, Youngs is going to go, right?
Well, no, I don't think so.
I would say Youngs would go. I'd say Laws is going to go.
No.
No, Laws won't go.
What's Laws, 30?
I don't think that matters. Win the next game.
Laws is 30.
Win the next game.
Yeah, look, I'm with you on that. I think you should win the next game. But we all know how World Cup cycles are.
Well, Eddie Jones, is Eddie Jones going to stay in charge for the next couple of years?
I think he has to.
I think there's a compelling argument that he should.
I would definitely want him.
I would
definitely want him for the full next World Cup cycle.
What?
So he's contracted until 2021.
He's got to go.
I don't like having the half and half World Cup cycle.
Yeah. So it was one or the other.
Yeah, and I definitely...
Well, it did all right. Razzy Erasmus managed it all right.
He did.
So maybe Gatland for the final 2 years.
Yeah, well...
Let have a couple of years in New Zealand, Gats, then come on back.
I would
definitely have Eddie Jones for the next 4 years. I would say,
If your choice is Eddie for two and Gatland for two, you'd be mad not to take it. Other than that, I think you move on from Eddie Jones now.
So one thing you can say is that squad... Unlike a couple of years ago where it appeared like there were cracks and there were maybe issues and people were talking about training regimes and stuff, that group were incredibly happy and motivated and totally behind Eddie Jones.
They are until they're not, though. I mean, I've always said this, they are until they're not.
But they are. So he shouldn't... I don't see the logic of saying now... A couple of years ago, or 18 months ago, I would have been saying, "Oh, Eddie Jones will do the World Cup, then he'll go."
The whole English confidence thing, I think, is a veneer. I think a lot of these rugby cultures are just veneers. Whether they be talking about how much they care about their mothers in meetings or being great citizens or whatnot, it's all nonsense. And I think England are no difference. They say that they're happy, and we've got. I mean, what else are they going to say? What else would you possibly say if you were in the England World Cup camp? Other than this is the best.
France.
It's not just saying they're happy. It's when you go.
Are they actually happy?
When you go on Instagram and you look at them having coffee with the boys, or going around Disneyland together, or going around Harajuku together, they do.
Yeah,
look.
And there's probably two minders with cattle prods saying smile whilst you get this on Instagram.
And then they don't speak to each other afterwards.
And when professionally, I mean, you don't have to all be best mates, but when professionally they come together and play what people were talking about as the best rugby that's been played in the last 4 years,
do you think you can get away with being a top class international rugby team without being best mates?
Yeah.
I think you could do.
I think it's difficult.
I don't think England are in that position.
Yeah. There was just a general question there.
It should be like any job, really, shouldn't it?
No, because the army is not like any job. And I guess professional sports is more like the armed forces than anything else, which is you're not trained to fight for king and country. You're trained to fight for the guy next to you. And I think that does matter, particularly in team sports, contact sports like rugby.
I believe it does matter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Hated Phil.
Best mates. So maybe qualifying the best mates. You need to care about the
yes,
guy next to you. Yeah.
Yes. You can't just be an absolute arse.
Yeah.
I guess.
But I think this England team do have that. From everything that I've seen, and I have absorbed a lot of content over this World Cup.
Oh, you've made a lot of content over this World Cup, to be fair.
Yeah. I really think they've got that. And so I would not be calling Freddie Jones's head at all.
I'm not calling his head, but I think once the contract runs out...
In two years.
But isn't he meant to be transitioning to another coach now? Wasn't that the idea? That was a potential option if
they have the right candidate.
I think that's a mess.
I think that is a mess. Yeah, I think you've got to have full cycles.
Yeah.
I know Razzie's just done it on 2 years, but
imagine being the guy trying to work with Eddie Jones. Alpha males. Gatland. Imagine trying to integrate Gatland
with Eddie Jones.
No.
In fairness, John Mitchell, which we all called out as being a potential disaster.
Yep.
That has been very, very good in England's defence.
John Mitchell could be England's next coach.
I never liked the number two going to number one.
Dean Ryan.
You have called it before.
Dean Ryan, there we go. That's our man. Very highly thought of in the RFU.
He's got to carry on, though.
Who would you have?
I hate to say Rob Baxter's star might be declining a little bit. What I mean is, I don't want Rob
Baxter... Four consecutive Premiership finals is... that's terrible.
But what I'm saying is, does Rob Baxter find himself in a situation where the ex-Toulouse coach was, which is... The game has passed him by. You want to have him at his height, which is probably now. You don't want to wait 2 years and then maybe he comes in and the game's moved on, a few extra steps. Get him in now.
Eddie Jones did what he did with Japan. He's been to two World Cup finals.
Three World Cup finals.
If you kind of want pedigree, you've got it there. There were question marks 18 months ago. He's answered those question marks now.
What Jamie Joseph? For me.
So he would. Sorry?
What Jamie Joseph? Would you have
just,
him?
Just have a repeat.
Yep. Just get Jamie Joseph in.
Well, if it Scott was a disaster, Brown, if we were knocked Brown, out in the pool stages as in 2015, then I'll go with you. But we just lost in a World Cup final. And I regard that as, on reflection, disappointing, but a success.
But so if the argument isn't really that, is it? The argument is, if Eddie is true to his word, like he was when he took up the job and said, I know when I'm leaving... The contract extension is literally just an extension of that. The idea is they've got to phase someone in anyway.
Well, options are all open at the minute.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want that as the RFU.
No.
And you just said you wouldn't want it.
No, absolutely not.
So if Eddie Jones walked away now, Jamie Joseph might be the most appropriate man. Because the Baxter thing, I love Rob Baxter. My concern would be he has done it in one environment and he's done it very successfully in four and taken them to that point from nowhere, from the Championship and below, and four consecutive Premiership finals, and the development of talent, and all that is amazing. He has done it in one setup.
Yeah,
it's not like a Jamie Joseph or an Eddie Jones who has done it, or a John Mitchell, with mixed results for John Mitchell. But people who've done it all over the world.
So the
guy that I'm thinking of, who I'm not sure if England have anyone like this,
Steve Diamond.
Maybe the one setup would be true of that as well.
Okay.
But
Russia, he's done Russia.
Someone who's making all the right moves to get a job like this in the future would be someone like Ronan O'Gara.
I thought you were going to say Chris Boyd.
Chris Boyd is interesting.
So Ronan O'Gara is...
Ronan O'Gara, just the breadth of his experience is incredible.
Yeah, but let me just critique the Ronan O'Gara thing, which is very smart. Until this season, he's never had a head job, has he? So he's head coach of La Rochelle now.
I'm thinking he's on the right trajectory.
He's on the trajectory.
So I would never say Ronan O'Gara going for the Ireland job now. And I think if he got appointed as the Ireland job now, which obviously won't be, that would be an absolute disaster. That would be literally the worst move he could make.
Yep.
He needs to continue on the trajectory.
He's got wins with La Rochelle now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting. I like what he's done because he's never been the head man. So you can go to Canterbury, you can go to Racing, you can go everywhere. You never carry the can, but you gain the experience.
He's actually doing like almost a reverse John Mitchell.
Which is be head man everywhere and don't do anything and then become a secondary guy.
Yes.
Yes, I like that.
Which is, I prefer the O'Gara approach to building up to the head man.
Yes, agreed.
O'Gara for England?
But I definitely...
Not yet.
I definitely think it's quite a football kind of mentality to say, right, get all the young guys in now. Because
rugby mentality.
No, it's very much a football thing. You used to hear it about England all the time after every major tournament. Get rid of all them. Get in a load of kids.
Problem is, if you're working on 4 year cycles, I mean that's exactly basically what what's his name did
Lancaster.
Lancaster.
Lancaster did, and he paid the price for it.
He paid the price for it, but that was quite unique circumstances. The age profile of the team in the
2011
World Cup was aging.
Yeah.
Long in the tooth, and a lot of players were retiring. Whereas now, as we say, the youngest team ever to play in a World Cup final.
So do you know what they put it down to the weird ages of the England team. Some people do, at least. They go all the way back to 2003. So the 2003 team were together for so long, when they won the World Cup, they almost retired en masse.
Yeah, it was a disaster for England, actually.
Yeah.
And then the next England team came in, and there was no kind of like, you know, the second string would be, I don't know, probably people like Dave Flatman, David Barnes, those sort of guys never really got a fair shot. They wouldn't get blooded like they do now. And since then, England's age profile has been all over the show, all the way up until you get to Lancaster, who then ripped it all up and started again.
And arguably the 2019 vintage benefited from that, because there's a lot of players that have got a lot of caps at their relatively tender ages.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think there'll be. I think there should be some turnover and some change.
I think we just carry on, win every game.
Yeah.
And there will be young guys, if they're good enough, they'll earn their spot, as Tom Curry and Sam Underhill have done, for example.
Where the places that England do need it, they need another option for inside centre.
Yep.
Other than Owen Farrell or Manu Tuilagi, because Piers Francis is not it.
Nope.
They need another option for fullback, which Anthony Watson might be. But yeah, they need another option. They do need another option for scrum half.
100%. They need another two options.
Yes. I agree with that.
And tight head prop.
But they've got some good tight head props.
Harry Williams scored a nice
Harry Williams,
today.
Bloody hell.
But you do. You need other guys with the international experience.
Well, some of those, and this is where actually you can, I think, have some legitimate criticism of Eddie Jones for this World Cup. And overall, that's not to discredit all of the positives, but we were not lone voices. Lots of people, ex-players, journalists, whatever, were all saying, what's going on with the scrum half situation? Why have so few players had any game time?
Yep.
Why has he only taken two? And the same with tight head prop.
So,
same with tight head prop.
The scrum half situation.
You've had four years to solve this conundrum, and we're left with just two tight head props to take. One of them is Dan Cole.
Yeah, so the scrum half. By the way, and you took Rory McConachy. No knock on him. But did he need to go for 11 minutes?
Yeah.
Joe Cocker-Singer, did he need to go for...
Piers Francis,
did he need to go? No, of course not. But
Jack Noll, Rory McConachy, and Joe Thokkonen-Singer. Maybe a scrum half who could potentially slot on a wing if you got desperate late in the game. And a tight head prop.
Dan Robson would have been ideal for that, really.
Because Razzie Erasmus's take on the scrum is not that South Africa are way better than England at scrummaging, but he said because...
I guess they cared more.
Because they've got three of them in each position, he said when you look at the amount of minutes that they've played over the tournament, he said ours were fresher. He said the England players played way more minutes over the World Cup. Even missing a game, Kyle Sinclair, Dan Cole, whatever, Mako Vunipola had all played way more minutes than their South African counterpart. And he said, over 7 weeks...
Sure, that's a good thing, though.
Well, he said, over 7 weeks, but that does have an impact.
The games against Tier 1 nations, Clive Woodward, in his book after 2003, described it as like being in a 60-mile-an-hour car crash.
Yes.
Those high-end games. And you're
and they were small then.
You do, yeah.
They were normal blokes. Then.
They were lighter than the under 20s are now.
Yes.
So you're doing it week after week after week after week after week, and it is. I mean, Sinclair obviously played 2 minutes of the game, but he was touch and go to actually even play that game.
So minutes
hobbled off.
Exactly.
There must be a ratio somewhere of how many minutes you should accrue over what time period.
But
so
that would be
500 minutes over 2 years or something.
I think if the head coach of the World Cup winning side, whose scrum just annihilated the opposition scrum, says, I don't think it's because England aren't as good at scrummaging, I think it's because my players were fresher because they played less minutes. I might take Razzie Erasmus's word.
Yeah, but it's all guesswork. I mean, I honestly think it's all guesswork, because if that could be empirically proven, or if Eddie Jones doesn't think that, well, I'm happy to listen to Eddie Jones. Or if Warren Gatland didn't think that, I'd listen to Warren Gatland.
So do you think South Africa just miraculously got way better at scrummaging from last week, and England got way worse? Or do you think maybe Razzie Erasmus might be onto
stronger
something?
and better scrimmaging.
Yeah, but they didn't. They didn't win loads.
I don't believe that. As you well know, I don't believe that.
They did their. They got all the body fat. Calculator directly before the game.
But South Africa didn't have that sort of dominance against Wales last week.
Wales have never changed their props. Wales have had pretty much the same props throughout the entire tournament.
And this weekend was a game too far for them.
But the scrum. I mean, you know, looking at the two performances, you'd say the Wales performance would be better, particularly at the scrum. So that argument wouldn't hold up just because it's Wales. And the Wales' props are nowhere near as good as England's props. Right?
Well, I think... Or are they?
Well, no, they played South Africa a week earlier.
Okay.
So they had a game less in the tank. And then this weekend was their game. Or maybe they're fresher
because they played Wales. I think it's all guesswork.
I think hindsight is always 20/20, but it was insane to only take two tight head props.
Yes, I agree with that. Here's what I think, right? I think coaches say these things to their players to build up, do you know, that veneer of confidence, that veneer of... you know, sort of the expectation. So they'll say to them, hey, look, guys, you guys will feel far fresher than your opposite numbers because we've managed your minutes. And meanwhile, the opposition coach will be saying, hey, guys, get on the field now. You're going to be great because you've played more together. You've had more minutes together than your opposite number. They're all playing games. And if Razi Erasmus had won that game with his props having more minutes, he'd say, well, we were just more battle-hardened. I'm sure it's finger in the air time.
It is, and it's, for me, there is no way you can empirically prove it. Partly because every player will be different.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not about empirically proving, but it's about knowing your players.
Billy Vunipola.
Yeah. Billy Vunipola is the example I was going to give before tournament. But if that was a different player, a Kyle Sinclair, perhaps, or Thankful or Marlowe, or whoever it is, a different player with a different constitution, a different attitude, and different recovery rates, it's a different scenario.
Yes.
So it's about knowing your players.
I can't disagree with that. Back to tighten props. Of course you take three. Of course you do. It's bizarre they didn't. Still bizarre. Particularly when they had 8 million wingers.
4-year cycle. England, at the very least, need to come up with a Andrew Porter, someone who could scrummage
Bamba,
both sides.
Denver Bamba.
Or Jason Leonard, who could scrummage both sides if needed. Or just... in the next 4 years, find and cultivate and nurture a tight head prop and a scrum half and a fullback.
Do you know who the guy is for that?
Tight head prop. Avian Lewis Roberts.
Yes. But the guy to nurture you a tight head, Warren Gatland. Warren Gatland will come in and he'll pick up the 8th best tight head at Doncaster, right? And before you know it, he will be the tight head for England for decades to come.
He's on the bench for Leeds Met 2s.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. And that's what will happen. You don't realise how much you need Gatland until he leaves.
Mm.
God, Wales is going to be a wasteland, though. Absolute wasteland. But, you know, on a serious note, how did he know Thomas Francis was going to be this good? How did he know? But he did.
Thomas Francis is very good at holding up a scrum.
That's all he wants.
I wouldn't have minded that on Saturday.
Yeah. Get me Thomas Francis. What? No, seriously, do it.
He's English. Honestly, he's English. Yeah.
Donny Prop. There'll be someone out there. There will be someone.
Well, that you could argue is that and the scrum half depth and the two failures of the system. Yeah. To have not brought about a tighter prop, which Eddie Jones was confident he could take and would be useful at a World Cup, because clearly he didn't think Harry Williams was that. Otherwise, he would have taken.
Well, I, for the life of me, cannot work out the thought process that says Ben Youngs world class, everyone else not as good as Ben Youngs. It just doesn't stack up to me.
Yeah, it doesn't stack up to me.
Definitely.
That's the biggest critic. And the one thing I will say about Eddie, and I think he is genuinely world class at this, maybe one of the best in the world, is his identification of talent. He knows talent when he sees it.
You know, Marcus Smith. Who you saw training with Brighton College or whoever it was as a 16-year-old.
Matt Gitter, as I mentioned 1 million times. Ted Hill. Ted Hill's a guy that's going to have to be put into consideration.
Tom Curry. Ben Curry, the one that you picked first.
Yes, exactly.
Ted Hill, again, he's an exceptional prospect, but you're saying Ted Hill, that's somebody he's going to have to... Is that based on his performances or just because he's young?
Absolutely is. The boy's a beast.
He is very good.
Oh, he is very good.
He's not yet a world-class talent. Or no. Even close to the conversation.
No.
He will be in a couple of years' time.
Potentially
in a few years'
time. And that's my point. We should carry on the path we are with this squad. And when Ted Hill's performances warrant it, he'll be introduced in the way that Curry was.
Do you know who they did this to? And looking back at it, it was ridiculous. He should have been in the England team 4 or 5 years ago. Mark Wilson. Because Mark Wilson was in a less trendy pack.
Yeah, we were calling for him for a long time.
And if you don't get... You know, sometimes you won't get those performances because if you're not playing in a world-class pack, like the England pack is, maybe you don't... You know, you're not that guy. But you put Ted Hill or Mark Wilson into the England pack, he's one of your best players.
Unless they're playing South Africa.
Unless you're playing South Africa, in which case you don't play him at all. And that's a guy that...
Blame Lancaster for that. Yep. For not picking Wilson.
Exactly right. Exactly right, Phil. so I'll just say... Yeah, Ted Hill could be the next Mark Wilson if you didn't pick him. And that's a guy that will probably be...
So you said JB says Haskell shouldn't have played in 2015.
Why would I say that?
No, I'm joking.
Okay, just making sure. Mark Wilson will be another guy who needs to be replaced because he must be 30-something.
29?
I think he's younger than that. He's younger than he looks.
And you don't need to replace someone because they're 30.
Well, 34 for the World Cup. Look,
exactly the point you made earlier, the 03 World Cup winning team.
He was
they still won a World Cup.
During the World Cup.
Yeah, but they still won a World Cup, right? And that's... it depends what you want. Do you want to win every... if you win every game, by definition, you'll win the World Cup. So that's fine. Well, but if you're working on World Cup cycles, if you want to nurture...
I don't like this whole age thing, the get them in because they're young, or get rid of them because their age starts with a 3.
So how
are they going to help you win the next game?
Yeah, but how
end of conversation.
How do you nurture a tight head prop if you're not willing to do that?
Well, there is a gap there because Dan Cole is not the second best tight head prop in the UK.
Yeah.
Or in England.
It's probably fair to say that is true.
So you do it. And Eddie Jones, in fairness, has done it because Haskell was a key player for the first 2 years. Hartley started every game pretty much every game on their 19-game winning run.
Yeah.
He's already done it once.
I'm trying to think of tight heads England could bring up.
Well, it's concerning how few there are.
Well, I mean, there's some good lads at Northampton. Painter is
Aaron Painter.
Who is the big...
Aaron Painter's one. Joe Hayes at Leicester's a young guy.
Who is the big lad who I always like? Is it Hill?
Paul Hill.
I like him a lot. But he doesn't seem to get much game time.
Yeah, he seems to be behind.
Jamal Ford Robinson, obviously a shoo-in.
Obviously
a shoo-in.
To finish this.
Yes.
Yes.
I've just looked back at the 2011 squad. Do you know how many props England had in the 2011 squad?
Six, I'd say.
I would have said six.
So originally they had 5.
Okay, did they have a swing?
Had Matt Stevens, who could prop on both
sides. Oh, okay.
And that was pre-2 reserve props on the bench. When Andrew Sheridan... God, it seems like a long time ago, Andrew Sheridan playing. When Andrew Sheridan was ruled out through injury, who was he replaced with?
Andrew Sheridan might have been replaced by Julian White, something like that.
Nope.
No, because it would have been a loose head.
Andrew Sheridan's a tight head, was he not?
No,
he was a loose head. Yeah, of course, because he got knocked out by Julian White. He was a tight head. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Andrew Sheridan.
Turner. Turner.
Nope. You're not going to get it, because it's not a prop.
What?
Martin Corey. Simon Shaw.
You are much closer.
Martin
Corey is the closest you've been.
An 8.
A back
Leicester
5.
Number 8.
Moody.
No, Leicester number 8.
Waltram. But who looks like he could play prop? Maybe it's a mistake.
Look like, yeah.
Maybe they sent him off a photo.
Find me someone the same size and shape as Matt Stevens.
Yeah, done.
So they went to the World Cup with 4 props.
What?
They had Dan Cole, Davy Wilson, Corbisiero and Matt Stevens as their 4 props.
Davy Wilson seems like a lifetime
ago. That's insane.
Yeah, that is crackers. But they had 3 scrum halves, 3 hookers. Only 3 centres, although I guess they had Flood and Wilkinson, who could have played 12.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exciting stuff.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The third place match?
In the background. Kinda.
I've not even seen the highlights.
Yeah, I watched it in the background. It kind of, I don't want to get into it too much.
No.
And it's very easy to say these things with hindsight, but Ben Smith was the best player on the pitch. Ben Smith was unreal.
Weird.
Yeah, yes.
Weird that unreal players play unreal.
Yes. He was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Wales did quite well.
They did.
Early on to keep it close, but New Zealand were far stronger. And this got me thinking about the... do you remember like Dungeons and Dragons type games, or going back to kind of what was just about my era as a kid, Pokemon type games?
Yes.
And you play a fire type Pokemon against a grass type Pokemon.
Makes sense.
Fire's going to win.
Of course.
You play a water type Pokemon against the fire type Pokemon, the water's going to win.
Yep.
And water against grass, grass is going to win. Yeah. So you have these little triangles. And I don't quite have it fixed, but there is a type of game plan. It's not even a type of game plan, it's a type of team. Like Wales can beat South Africa and have done so 5 out of the last 6, or there or thereabouts. Wales can beat England.
Yes.
Wales cannot beat New Zealand. There is no way that Wales can beat New Zealand. Wales haven't beaten New Zealand since the 1970s.
Well, look, I think Gatland wants to put on a show. throw it wide. Give Lane the ball. It doesn't work, does it? We all know it doesn't work. Why bother? Now, Twitter being Twitter, obviously it's an outrage. This is a new one, isn't it? In the age of player welfare, why are they playing a third place playoff?
Great question.
Grow up. Exactly. I'll give you a clue why they do it, because it's their job. Their job title on their business cards, if they have such a thing, says professional rugby player. It means occasionally you've got to put on your boots and play professional rugby.
Do one.
And get a chance to play the third best team in the world. Or the second best team in the world, as the official rankings are after the World Cup.
I mean, it shouldn't exist because it's not very good. But to say you shouldn't play rugby for player welfare, if we're going to take that example, why are we playing these meaningless matches? Cancel half of the Pro 14. Halfway through the season, right? Look at the bottom half of the table. Go, right, there's literally no point in you
dead
playing
rubber,
any.
Yeah,
no.
Stop.
Yeah, no more. You just don't play. Don't play. It's dangerous.
Pre-season friendlies?
Don't do it.
Don't
no
do
benefit
it.
To it.
No point.
So, what a nonsense.
Yeah, it is. I think we should, again, just to go returning back to some positives, it was fantastic. The South Africans, I love the fact that Scout Brits is a World Cup winner. The nicest man in rugby.
Who officially retired after Saracens won everything last year. This last season.
Trophy.
And the best one.
One
more trophy. Just make it the best one.
And the oldest player to win a World Cup.
We should make a list of like definitive sports exits. So Peyton Manning winning the Super Bowl would be a good one.
Yeah, so few players get to do it on their own turn.
Yeah.
Johnny Wilkinson bowing out with Heineken Cup.
Yeah.
Yep, that's a good one.
With back-to-back Heineken Cups.
Ray Lewis won a Super Bowl on his last game. Try to think of some others.
Fairy tale endings.
Very few get the fairy tale.
Yeah, there you go. Rugby fairy tale endings. Help us out at Rugby Podcast. Tweet us. Who in rugby has had fairy tale endings?
Well, Dan Carter.
Dan Carter.
Although he didn't retire after that.
No, you're right, actually, because he went to Japan.
No, he went wild.
Racing in Japan.
Yeah, Racing in Japan. So, no, it doesn't...
That was the last game Richie played.
Recorded, yes.
Yeah.
Captain in 2 consecutive World Cup finals.
Inductee number 143 to the Rugby World Hall of Fame.
Congratulations.
And owner of an Egg Chasers tie.
He is, he's wearing that this weekend.
Yeah. And, obviously, a lot's been said about Sir Khaleesi. I think he spoke brilliantly after the game. His leadership qualities clearly he's done that, but I think he's a great ambassador for the game.
There are certain people who just have that effect on you. Like I was mentioning last week, Johan Ackerman, who I was lucky enough to interview this week on Rugby Dungeon. Just plug that one. Sir Khaleesi would be up there. I mean, we were lucky enough to interview him in Monaco, and he was genuinely amazing. He was just genuinely amazing guy.
Was that the... audio that we lost.
Yeah, that's one that we lost. Oh. You know, 5 minutes of Sir Calise. 5 minutes! It's worth a fortune now.
I know.
We lost.
The collective.
Yeah, we win as a team and lose as a team.
Exactly, Tim. Exactly. That's why we're so successful as an Egg Chasers trio, because we've got each other's backs at all times.
That there, Tim, is why Phil is the Sir Calise of Egg Chasers.
He is. He really, genuinely is. And very, very quickly then, a team of the tournament. What I have noticed...
Oh, no, not a team of the tournament.
No, very quickly. We can run through this. What I have noticed is all of a sudden, after South Africa win, everyone's team of the tournament is suddenly stacked with South Africans.
Yes.
Interestingly,
Matt Dawson's. last week. Not a single one.
Weird, hey?
Well, it's interesting. Even after that final, I'm still going. I think a combined England, if I was combining the South Africa team, I'd still only pick maximum half a dozen South Africans.
Sadly, you've done what I've done and what all the English press do is we focus too much on our domestic players because we know them so well. And now we've seen the matchup one-on-one, you'd struggle to make that argument now, I think.
Mm. Mm. So anyway, team of the tournament. Loads of people will, do these. So there's just a few players that are not going to get mentioned that I think should be in there. Like all of a sudden, Jamie George is the best hooker of the tournament. He had a great tournament, but Shota Horry should get that number two shirt.
100%.
100%.
Although Joe Taufefe...
Taufetete.
Got nominated for World Rugby Player of the Year this year.
Mm.
Which was interesting.
He's pretty good.
He's not bad.
Token gesture for a tier two player?
He's a good player. There are so many more appropriate tier two players from this tournament.
Shota Horry is a wonderful shout.
And Haimeno would be another one. And Leach.
Matsushima or Fukioka.
Yeah.
The scrum half or cool. Fly half I actually thought
all four of Japan's props were superb, both in their scrimmaging ability and also their handling ability.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, everyone's back row has got Tom Curry, Peter Steftatoy, and although he's not a seven, so it shouldn't be. He wears two sixes.
Yeah, two sixes.
And Vermeulen, but I think Jimeno won't get named in team of the tournament in a lot of places, but he should.
Yeah. Peter Steftatoy definitely gets in for me. There's no ifs or buts.
And Peter Steftatoy, who is now the newly appointed World Rugby Player of the Year.
Rightly so.
Yes. I would have given it to Colby.
No.
But it's a tight call.
Someone's got to get over that gain line.
It's a tight call.
Someone's got to
Oh, he's brilliant. He's outstanding.
I'm very happy with...
Yeah. I think it's a great shout. Vermeulen was amazing in the final, and I suppose maybe he should make the team of the tournament for that alone, but I think he was exceptional in the final. But, I just think there's a lot of players that are going to suddenly... Like Matsushima, I've just been reading some well-known rugby names saying, here's my team of the tournament, and all of a sudden... Matsushima is not in there. Yeah. So what's he playing at?
You have to have one of those.
Yeah. I think Matsushima's the second best.
Radrada. Exactly.
Yeah. Has to be in there.
Yeah.
Radrada was unbelievable.
Yeah, Matsushima's the second best Japanese winger. I thought the other one was better.
Fukioka.
Yeah, I thought he was quality.
Josh Adams is
fair. One of those guys.
AJ McGinty?
Came off the bench.
I tell you what.
Anyway, no. Okay. We'll do the domestic podcast another time. Right, so I genuinely like some more, if you know of a good rugby fairy tale.
Yeah.
There must have been some 03 players that retired after that.
Yeah, I was thinking that, but I'm sure, in my mind, I'm sure there was a thing in that England camp saying, you're not allowed to retire, because it was going to be like a big distraction.
Because a load of them still made it to 2005.
Martin Johnson, that was his last game, wasn't it?
It was his last game, but he didn't retire after
And
the
Neil
game.
Back?
Yeah.
No, because didn't Neil Back make 2005?
No.
Mm. 2007.
No, 2005
Lions. Ooh, interesting.
No, so I'm pretty sure they had a conversation in that squad, and I might be lying through my teeth here, but it was something like, no one's talking about retirement, we're playing the game. They did retire, but they retired like 2 or 3 weeks afterwards.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I'm sure of it. Martin Johnson did not retire on that day.
I'll look at these. Yeah. Neil Back did travel tour in 2005.
Mm.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he's about 35 or 36 as well.
So Neil Back allegedly 36.
Listener, Hi Neil.
Hi Neil. Was coaching England before he ever played for them. Do you know that little fun fact? He was doing strength and conditioning for the England team before he ever got capped.
That's cool.
That is cool.
That is very cool.
And he used to take his conditioning very, very... Well, I'm sure he still does. But like in the days where bringing your own sandwiches to training was taking seriously.
Yeah, I remember there was a group pool stage in 2003 where his shirt ripped and he took off his shirt and he was... Because he was only small. I've met him a couple of times, actually. Stood next to him. He's not at all bloke.
Didn't you not get him into Mojo's in Manchester once?
No, it was... It was Leeds... there was an Oktoberfest do in Leeds and I was getting a friend in. I was drunk.
To the mic,
this
Phil.
Was in about 2009 Phil, or something like that.
To the mic.
Sorry.
Thank you.
It's about 2009. And I was trying to get a friend in outside and I noticed him like waiting outside. There was a massive queue. And I Neil Back, how's it going? Just said hi to him. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm trying to get in, but I can't be bothered queuing. There's some of my mates are inside. I was like, oh, right. I'll find the bouncer who looks most like a rugby player. I'll go up to chat to him and say, look, World Cup winner, absolute legend, Neil Back is outside. Can you get him in? And I wandered off and promptly forgot about that conversation and went back to drinking Steins and left him outside.
I remember being hammered and meeting Luke Abraham outside of Mojo's in Manchester.
A good ponytail.
Yeah, and I said, oh, does anyone ever mention that you look like Sebastian Chabal? And said, yeah, all the time. And then frosty silence, so I went back inside. And that must have been like 10 years ago now. Maybe more than that, 15 years ago. Joy.
Right.
Have you done everything?
Yeah, that's the World Cup over. What a fantastic... If you've just started listening to our podcast during the World Cup, and looking at our download numbers, there's quite a few of those. Thank you very much.
Yeah, lots of them.
Hit subscribe because whether it's international rugby, whether it's domestic rugby, we're here all the time, every week. The only podcast that's there 52 weeks a year.
Never stops. Relentless. Like Peter Steph to Toy.
Yes. Too right. The PSTD has given quite a lot of England players PTSD after that final.
Well done.
And congratulations, South Africa.
Yes.
Enjoy your moment.
Well deserved. Team, so they win a bit like Ireland did last year, but more importantly, they won the World Cup, they won Player of the Year in Peter Steph to Toy, they won Team of the Year, and they won Coach of the Year in Razzie Erasmus, which all well deserved.
Yes.
Exactly. The one thing that France won this year.
Gone.
Untermac.
Just one thing, Roman Untermac,
breakthrough player
of the year. And that, again, fully deserved.
They are going to be... No, we'll talk about France another time, but they are going to be...
Put it on the whiteboard. Yeah. 2023 Home World Cup winners.
Tell you what, now that's a tour. Right, okay, we're all done.
At Rugby Podcast on Twitter, he's Jay Beardmore, I'm at Cocker, Phil is lurking somewhere, and England didn't win, so he will not reveal where he is lurking, but he might be sliding into your DM soon.
If you're lucky.
Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.